This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Isaac Davey Aronson, in for Frank Stacio. For the first time in 20 years, North Carolina has a Republican governor. So when Pat McCrory gave his State of the State address on Monday, both sides of the aisle listened closely. Republicans wanted to see if he would stick to GOP ideals, and Democrats wanted to know if he would stay true to his image as a pragmatic moderate. McCrory emphasized the need for tax reform and improvements to education. Critics said details were too sparse. Supporters said his tone was just right. But what did McCrory's speech say about how he'll govern during the next 4 years? Joining us to talk about McCrory's speech and North Carolina's political future, we have WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jessica Jones. Hi, Jessica.
Hi there.
Also joining us is Hodding Carter III. He's professor of leadership and public policy at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Welcome, Hodding.
Good to be with you.
And we have Becky Gray, vice president for outreach at the John Locke Foundation. Hi, Becky.
Hi, thank you.
So, Jessica, I want to start with you. Just tell us a bit about the speech itself. What were the main takeaways?
Well, the main takeaways were that the governor said that he wanted to bring more efficiency to state government and work on improving the economy and the state's educational system. And one of the first things that he talked about in his speech was a bill that limits unemployment benefits. Now, the governor has since signed that bill. He had said that that bill hurts business owners because of higher fees that they're paying into the unemployment system. And he also talked about watching the state's pennies in a number of ways. He said that seat warmers who were state employees won't be tolerated. He also talked about ways to improve education, including another bill that provides more support for vocational training. And he also said that he really supports what he calls digital education.
How would you characterize the reaction in the chamber, and what reactions have you heard from lawmakers?
Well, the response from Republicans was pretty enthusiastic, not surprisingly. He got a lot of applause from lawmakers at various key points in his speech. But Democrats, after the speech, said that they felt that it was a little bit too vague, that he didn't lay out enough about sort of the general policy ideas that would govern the rest of the administration. And they said that they wanted to see more specifics.
Becky, this is the first time we've had a Republican governor in quite a while. Do you think that raised the stakes of the speech? And do you think that that Republicans in the legislature and beyond were looking for certain things?
Well, I think so. And he certainly had a friendly audience, not only in the legislature, but I think across the state. He was a very popular candidate, won pretty handily his campaign. A lot of the themes that we heard and things that he talked about during the speech were actually things that he had talked about during the campaign. I guess one of my main takeaways was we didn't really have any surprises in this campaign. He talked about, as Jessica mentioned, education, efficiency in the economy, talked about job creation, talked a little bit about tax reform, gave us an idea of those kind of things. He talked again about branding, which we heard a lot about during the campaign as well. And then his focus in education seems to be along the career and vocational technical training, getting kids, graduates, people in North Carolina ready for work, be able to step into a job, and providing a well-skilled workforce for those businesses that may be thinking about coming to North Carolina. Again, all about creating jobs, getting the economy moving.
Hodding, what struck you most about the speech?
Well, I've heard it for 3.5 years to begin with. I mean, there was not any great deviation from the lines that he's been using. And therefore, I found it, just to be frank, boring, because it had no great conceptual framework. It had a list of specifics which go to the heart of much of the Republican agenda. But even there, I'm not sure what that means. I mean, what is at the heart of much of these rhetorical flourishes? I couldn't figure that one out, except on a couple of instances which were specific. And it's not necessary for a state of the nation or the state of the union or the state of the state to be highly specific. A really piece of soaring frame in which you are telling folks we are now going to once more be the great city on the hill, it's a nice thing to do. He didn't do that. Mm. He just simply made sure that everybody knew that on all the issues that he had been there, he's still there. For myself, I mean, some of the places he wants to go, I assume he wants to go, and I see on the immediate action with the bill that he just signed that he intends to go pretty much the way everybody in this legislature wants him to go. So there we are. But if there's something to be learned about a new governor or a new Pat McCrory or a new anything, it awaits the future. I mean, we are what you get. You see, you get.
Well, he did, you know, refer to himself at one point as an Eisenhower Republican.
I'm sorry, as an old Eisenhower Republican, I found that amusing beyond belief, okay? I mean, the Eisenhower Republican thing is almost the exact opposite of what the current Republican Party in this state and a lot of places is about. Ike was going to be the leader of the new Republican wave in the South, which was going to be folks who essentially were outside the old game of race and repression. That group vanished pretty fast. But Ike himself was, after all, a man who did a number of massive, not just one, public works statements in office. If by being Ike you mean a man who can rise above the partisanship of the moment, and a lot of people voted for Ike because he rose above the bitter divisions that came out of the McCarthy era and the like. If that is what the Ike is going to be, a man who really means to bring people together, hooray. We'll see.
Well, and he tied that Eisenhower Republican line directly to a proposal on infrastructure, which is big infrastructure projects, Becky, not something that Republicans have been very hot on in recent years.
No, but something that former Governor McCrory, or former Mayor McCrory, now Governor McCrory, has talked a lot about coming from Charlotte is infrastructure and highways. And he's talked about tying the ports, the intermodal facilities that we have across the state, making sure that the highway system, and I think that was the reference under which he called himself an Eisenhower Republican, was referencing when Ike built the highway system and the federal highway system. I think that was what the reference was. He has had a commitment to transportation and infrastructure going back to his many years as mayor of Charlotte, and I think that's what the reference was. And again, I don't think that was any surprise. We heard that during the campaign. We know that's a focus of his, knew it when he was a mayor. So again, no surprises there. But I think it was significant that he did mention that in his State of the State address, another focus on transportation.
It's actually a good thing that he said that in connection with transportation because in fact, that was not the most popular thing he did with some people who are now leaders in the Republican Party. The whole transportation thing was not just immediately endorsed
by
a lot of conservatives.
Right. Still isn't.
Right. Well, believe me, I know that too. But I mean, so it's worth remembering. It's a question that you might keep asking yourself: does his understanding of the necessity of that kind of partnership, and it is a partnership, that's what happened in Charlotte, is his understanding of that run contrary to the understanding of the new Republicans that anything that government touches is a bad deal?
Well, Jessica, McCrory floated a couple of ideas in his speech that would actually reverse decisions made by Republicans. He wants to restore funds to the drug court. He wants to restore the education cabinet. Tell us about those ideas.
Well, these were things that he mentioned in his speech, but we haven't heard anything since then from the governor's office. And so we don't really have a lot of information to go on other than what the governor said in his speech. But he did say that he'd like to see drug treatment courts reestablished. But the Republican leadership of the General Assembly cut state funding for that program back in 2011. And Republicans also cut money for a coordinator of the education cabinet. And that is essentially a non-voting body that provides recommendations for the governor. But it hasn't met in quite some time. So I think people were a little bit surprised by that, and we just haven't heard more about it since then.
Hodding, is that the sort of thing that you were just talking about, the perhaps going against what some of the Republicans, at least in the legislature, have done?
Well, of course. I mean, those are the two specifics I was talking about. But that's easy. I mean, that is to say, it's easy just to snipe at that, and he did it. I was thinking about the education thing, for instance. I mean, if you're trying to get efficiency and if you're trying to get an educational improvements, one of the great things to do is to make the guys who are in the field, these competing entities, actually work a lot more closely with the end product for all the students and not for the end product at state or the end product in Greenville or the end product here. And that's not a bad objective to go to if he wants to do it.
Well, Becky, what do you think this tells us about McCrory as we're still sort of getting to know him? I mean, we mentioned Eisenhower. I mean, those particular things he talked about actually, I thought, echoed a bit the sort of compassionate conservatism that we heard a lot about with George W. Bush.
For a while.
With the drug court focus, he talked about mental illness. He talked about drug addiction, those kind of things. So I think we do have a focus on that. That's something that he specifically mentioned. So it's something that is a concern to him. The education cabinet, I think, is a good idea. And keep in mind, too, that the Republicans cut the funding for the position of the coordinator for the education cabinet. They didn't cut the education cabinet. That's a group, as Hodding mentioned, these silos that, again, something that we've heard from Governor McCrory, breaking down the silos. And that education cabinet already exists. It is the university system, the state superintendent of public instruction, state board of education, president of the community college system, secretary of health and human services, independent colleges, and it's headed, chaired by the governor. So there's no reason at all that he can't bring that in. And the funding that was cut was for a coordinator position, which, you know, maybe people are thinking maybe we don't need to pay a coordinator, but the education cabinet would be a good idea. So I'm seeing some movements that way.
Well, we're going to talk more about education and also about tax reform after we take a short break. This is The State of Things. We're talking today about Governor Pat McCrory's State of the State speech and some of its political implications. With us are WUNC Capital Bureau Chief Jessica Jones, Hodding Carter, Professor of Leadership and Public Policy at UNC, and Becky Gray, Vice President for Outreach at the John Locke Foundation. Just ahead, fracking, unemployment, immigration, so much more to come. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Isaac Davey Aronson, in for Frank Stacio. Today we're talking about Governor Pat McCrory's State of the State speech and other political news of the week. With us at a roundtable are WUNC Capital Bureau Chief Jessica Jones, Hodding Carter, a professor of leadership and public policy at UNC Chapel Hill, and Becky Gray, Vice President for Outreach at the John Locke Foundation. Let's talk about reforming the state's tax code, a major priority that Pat McCrory mentioned in his speech. Let's take a listen.
We're going to develop a long-term strategic plan that updates our brand and puts us on a path to success. And first part of that plan is to fix, and modernize our tax system in North Carolina. We've got to do it.
Jessica, what do we know about Governor McCrory's tax reform plans?
Well, he's been saying it all along on the campaign trail that he'd like to lower the corporate tax and the personal tax, both state income taxes. But he hasn't really laid out a lot of specifics. And I think that some listeners were disappointed by the fact that he didn't say exactly what kind of plan he wanted to follow in his speech the other night.
Becky, Senate Republicans have a tax reform plan that they've put forward. Governor McCrory's, I think, administration has done a little bit perhaps to distance him from that. We're not sure how he feels about that. What's the Senate Republican plan going for?
The Senate Republican plan looks pretty much like a state sales tax, expanding the base and lowering the rate for the state sales tax. This is something that has been proposed by Senator Bob Rucho of Charlotte, who has taken the lead on this and has been very active and an active voice in proposing a concept, a plan. We haven't seen anything in writing yet on that particular plan, but what he is looking at, again, is broadening the base, the sales tax, extending that to many services across North Carolina. And one of the bumps in that, one of the problems with it, is that he also proposes a new business tax that would bring in about $4 billion in revenue compared to a corporate and franchise tax now currently brings in about $1.6 billion. A little bit of concern about that from the business community. I'd like to go back just a minute to McCrory's comments about the tax plan and what the focus of this is from all sides is to get a pro-growth tax plan into place, not just because it's outdated, not just because it was started in the 1930s and has become very cumbersome and jagged since then, but really something that will get the economy moving and create jobs and get us out of this recession that we're in. So Senator Rucho's plan is one that's dependent on sales tax, but with some concerns there with the business community. Also, it would include a 1% land transfer tax that some folks have a real problem with, again, going back to what's going to get the economy moving. There are a number of plans out there that people are talking about. There's one that the John Lott Foundation has put together. The Tax Foundation in Washington has come down and made some suggestions. I think they've got four or five different ideas. So there's a lot of ideas out there. The fact that Governor McCrory has not endorsed any one of these really doesn't come as any surprise. I think that this is going to take a lot of thought and negotiation, if you will, compromise, and considering all the ideas that are on the table to come up with a plan that, as he said, is a path to success, is long-term solutions, and offers a real pro-growth long-term plan.
Harding, does the tax system in North Carolina, you think, need to be reformed in a pro-growth way? And is getting rid of the income and corporate taxes and putting it on sales tax the way to do it?
I believe the need for reform, and the governor said fixing it, not reforming it, but at any rate, fixing the system is apparent to everybody. And the problem is when people are in power, their idea about reform is one thing. And when other people are in power, their idea of reform is another. And they aren't necessarily compatible, and they certainly aren't necessarily reform. They are change. Now, the first business, I think, should be do no harm with whatever you're doing. And I will tell you, what is being proposed right now is going to do harm to people who are basically already harmed the most in this state by the economy and by their own place in the pecking order of the economy. Second thing is, if you're going to go at something like this, and if you have that moment in time, and the Republicans have their moment in time, and go to it. But if you're going to, then really do a thoroughgoing, not a payoff to every little interest that you have promised things to over the time you were out of power. Really come up with a reform program which does the kind of work that they say they want to do, which is not merely to liberate people in the business sector from some onerous taxes as they see them, but also to liberate the people of the state from living in a really weird tax circumstance in which it is not as complex as the federal, but it certainly has got as many irregularities in it. One last thing. I was in business a long time. I came into business when the marginal tax rate in the United States was 90%. We invested in three new businesses when it was 90%. I was in business when it was 70%, and we started two new businesses then. Small town Mississippi, all right? It is simply untrue that a tax rate which hits the rich harder than it hits the other kills growth. The American whole tradition since World War II would be in another direction if that were true. So rushing to just simply take the burden off those least burdened in the name of a theory is all very well, but I don't know what the fact's going to be till I see the program.
Becky, I know you want to respond.
Right. Well, I really just wanted to point out that to Harding's point, tax reform is difficult. Fixing the tax system has been difficult. There have been tax reform efforts in North Carolina for 20 years, different study groups, different commissions. Many people from all sides have sat on those commissions and basically been able to do nothing. So it's very difficult to do. This whole idea of tax reform is not something that's just exclusive to a new McCrory administration or new Republican leadership. This is something that has been addressed and looked at. It's hard to do, and it's going to be hard to do this time.
Very, very hard. And when they did it back in the 80s in Washington, it was a really neat combination, frankly, of both Reagan and guys like Senator Bradley, a Democrat, when the federal tax code had some really good restructuring. They then proceeded over the next 30 or 40 years to undo a great deal of that work. And that keeping it reformed is also difficult.
We need to move on to education. And I want to listen to just a bit of Governor McCrory's State of the State speech, in which he talked about education reform, including improving education with lottery money. Let's take a listen.
I'm recommending that we pursue legislation to reallocate a portion of money away from the bloated and frankly annoying advertising and the large administration cost of the Lottery Commission. And we will use that money directly to help our students with technology.
Jessica, I gather that some people doubt there's really enough money in lottery advertising to make a dent in technology funding.
Well, that's absolutely right. Education makes up the biggest piece of the state's budget pie, and it costs a lot of money to run North Carolina schools, to keep students, to pay teachers, to do everything that needs to be done on that front. And so, you know, just the money that is used for an advertising budget just really isn't. We can't even say that it's a drop in the bucket, to be honest.
Well, and school superintendent June Atkinson came out afterwards and said that indeed the lottery money, I believe, is something like 4% of the education budget in the state. And she said, therefore, that moving that money around, the impact that it would have, she sees as being minimal. Hodding, what's your take on this?
Look, that kind of argument actually drives me crazy no matter who uses it. If you can't do everything with reform, don't do anything, give me a break. I mean, every little thing helps. I mean, and if you can find a site, of course, we understand it's only millions of dollars. It's nothing really important. But I mean,
they add up.
Do it. That's what I mean. I mean, no, there, I just think that's nonsense. The governor ought to go at anything he can go at. I personally, having been made ill to my stomach by lottery's selling game, and then the diversion of funds from that which it was sold for in other states I've lived in, that is, suddenly it's not going into education, it's going into almost everything else. You want to be doggone sure that once you have sold something to the people as a way to get there, you use it to get there.
Do we have a point of agreement here?
Absolutely.
Becky,
yes,
right
and probably discussing the merits of the state lottery is subject for a whole nother show or afternoons of show. But to getting back to McCrory's comments, I really do like the idea that he's talking about taking part of that lottery money and letting the districts, the school districts, use it as they need to for that flexibility to meet educational technology needs, get those into the school districts, those closest to the students, and use that money as they think most appropriate. Now, whether that would be used for laptops in the classroom, or I don't know what the answer to that is, and I don't think that any bureaucrat sitting in Raleigh knows what the answer is. I think that the answer is found in those local school districts. So as far as that point of the speech and what he talked about, I think that's a very good idea. I'd like to see even more of the lottery money and, quite frankly, other education money being given to the districts to use at their discretion to meet the needs in each of those LEAs.
Becky, I want to ask you as well that, you know, Governor McCrory put out some of these ideas, some more specific than others. But, of course, in order to accomplish anything, you'll have to work with the General Assembly. And as we discussed earlier, some of the ideas, perhaps like infrastructure investment, are not necessarily the most popular in his own party. How do you think that his, going by this speech and what you see as his agenda here, how do you think his relationship with the General Assembly will go?
Well, I'm gonna comment on the speech, but also on the first couple of weeks, almost a month that we've had that the General Assembly has been in session, and we've seen interaction between them. So far, I think that it is a good relationship. I sense that Governor McCrory may be holding back a bit, relying on what the General Assembly is going to do. The tax reform is a good example of that, I think, although he has certainly thrown some things out in this speech and other ways that the General Assembly has proposed legislation that would do some of the things that he would want to do. I see them working together. But, you know, North Carolina, we have very clearly defined roles of these different branches of government, and the legislator's business is to legislate, and it is the executive branch's business to execute those bills that they put into place. And I see that that is the way that it's working.
I want to listen to one more clip from Governor McCrory's State of the State speech. He did not just give a speech this week. Of course, he signed his first bills into law, including one related to unemployment benefits. And here's part of what he said about it on Monday night.
Borrowing from Washington with no idea or plan on how to pay for it ends with this administration right now. We aren't going to do it any longer. We are not going to borrow money from Washington with no idea on how to pay it back.
Jessica, what was he talking about there, and what does that have to do with unemployment insurance?
Well, the bill that the governor was talking about would limit the amount per week that people receiving unemployment would get, and it would also limit the duration of those benefits. And and this is all an effort to try to lessen the taxes that business owners are paying into the unemployment insurance fund. And it goes back to actually, this whole situation goes back to the recession, where the state had to borrow money from the federal government because so many people were claiming unemployment benefits. And so there is a debt that the governor was referring to in his speech that was already being paid back in the form of fees, $21 per worker per year, that had been raised in order to pay off that debt. And it was getting paid off. But the governor said that he wants that debt to be paid off faster. He obviously said he's not enthused about debts to the federal government. But of course, this has been a very heated issue at the legislature. And Democrats have pointed out that this is going to make things even harder for families who are still struggling to find work. And also, unemployment benefits put money right back into the local economy. There are studies that show that those benefits get spent right away. So I think it remains how that is going to affect the economy at this point. But the bill has been signed, and it will go into effect July 1st.
And, you know, as you mentioned, the debt to the federal government would have been paid back over a longer period had this bill not been signed into law. And by changing my understanding is that by changing the unemployment benefits, the state has actually lost out on some more federal money. Hunting, you know,
look, any stick to beat a dog. All right. And the theory behind this is not that we owe money to the feds. The theory behind it is that these benefits have been too high for too long, too often. And that's the underlying philosophy out of the Republican side. And it's a perfectly fair philosophy, but we ought not to kid around about it. It's not about how I don't want to borrow money from Washington. They'll borrow it from Washington again if hell hits us again. But the question is, what is it you're doing to people, not to theory, to people? And what you're doing to people is terrible. And what is really terrible is that in the rhetoric of we are going to, in effect, keep these freeloaders off long-term unemployment, you're forgetting how many of those freeloaders were newly acquired beneficiaries because of an economy over which they had no control whatsoever. And now we're saying, well, you not only didn't control it, you're not going to get anything out of this that will make it possible to actually live. Do the math on what it is that those unemployment benefits are going to be now, and then go out, as one of those folks said, and live on it.
You know, Becky, it does seem that Governor McCrory, I mean, he signed that bill into law in private without media, and the legislature rushed through an education bill that he could sign first. It did not seem like he wanted that to be the first bill he signed.
Well, I think he wanted the education bill to be the first bill that he signed. I don't know that it wasn't that he didn't want the unemployment bill. He really wanted that education bill to be the first one. And, you know, most of the bills that the governor signs, they signed at their office without a lot of hoopla, without a press conference. So I didn't see anything really unusual about that. I have to take issue a little bit with Jessica's comments as well as Hunting's, as you would probably expect. But Jessica mentioned that the whole point of this was to lessen taxes on business. And Hunting said that this was about taking those benefits away from the unemployed people. What this is really about is getting out of debt. This is one of the first, and I think it is significant that this is one of the first things that the General Assembly and the governor has done, is getting out from under that debt. The best thing that we can do for unemployed people is to get the economy moving and get them back to work, not to extend these long-term unemployment benefits. What the focus is of the governor as well as the General Assembly is getting the economy moving, getting business back in business, creating jobs so, again, we can get people back to work, get them off the dependency of government, and become independent again.
It was once a great Republican theory that one of the best ways to grow the economy was to have bonded indebtedness so two sets of people benefited, the general good and then the big boys who bought the bonds. And it was centrally a Republican philosophy. Mostly the old Democratic philosophy was the bondholders are the enemy and this kind of debt's a bad deal, except when required by war and by depression. Well, what we got now is a debt necessitated by a depression. I mean, I know nobody wants to call it a depression, but it didn't last long enough. But that recession made this thing a very large deal. You do not undo immediately the deficits of a fundamental transformation of the economy in ways which we're going to take some time to get out of. And I will say again, I wish to God I believed for 1 minute that changing my taxes back in the bad days when I was having to pay them would have changed everything that I was doing economically in either direction. It's just simply not demonstrably true. Sorry.
And I mean, Becky, doesn't the economy need to get back on track before people need to be, if there aren't jobs there for people to get if they don't have an employment?
Well, you've got to start this ball rolling somewhere. You've got to get it going. We've got to get out of this gridlock. And just one other point, too, about this unemployment insurance. This whole package would also put money into the reserve again so that I don't know when it may happen, but we're back in the same boat and we don't have money to pay these, that we've got some kind of reserve built up so we don't have to go out and borrow money from the federal government, which guess where the federal government gets their money? So, you know, it's all a big circle.
China.
Exactly. Yeah. More debt.
Well, so much to talk about and so little time. I want to thank all of you for being here today. Jessica Jones, WUNC Capital Bureau Chief, Hodding Carter, Professor of Leadership and Public Policy at UNC, and Becky Gray, Vice President for Outreach at the John Locke Foundation. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Coming up next, FCC Commissioner Michael Copps tells us what's wrong with media consolidation. That's next on The State of Things.